Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 960. Update on the high-profile hacks. This is being recorded on June 8th of the year 2017. As I am speaking of, quote, Russiagate, unquote, is in full media swing or spin might be a better way of putting it. This is the contention that Russia interfered in America's elections, and the core of that contention is alleged hacking of the Democratic Party, John D. Podesta, and others by, quote, Russian intelligence, unquote. People from the Trump camp have also been, as a matter of record, meeting with people from Russia, which does not mean that Russia interfered in our election process. I suspect that what it really means is, given the fact that the point man for the Trump business empire's dealings in Russia is a Russian immigrant and professional criminal named Felix Satter, or Satter, S-A-T-E-R, or S-A-T-T-E-R, who not incidentally worked for, drumroll please, trumpet flourish please, the Central Intelligence Agency. I suspect that some of those contacts were actually arranged in order to remove Donald Trump from office. Recall that in 1972, and we will go into Watergate, I think, in our next few programs, younger listeners may not be aware of some of the features of Watergate, but we're being told this is the new Watergate, etc. In June of 1972, the Watergate break-in took place. Then Richard Nixon was re-elected. Then he was deliberately ousted from office in what was basically a coup d'etat because he wasn't far enough to the right. I suspect something very similar is going on here, and that these, quote, contacts, unquote, between people in the Trump camp and Russian officials, which certainly took place, are being spun in order to make this appear that Russia interfered in our elections. But the core of, quote, Russiagate, unquote, are what I have called the high-profile hacks, something I have spoken about in, among other programs, 917, For the Record, 917, 923, 924, 940 and 943, also recently in, For the Record, 958 and 959 as well. Suffice it to say that not only do the hacks not appear, many of them may not have been hacks at all, not only do they not appear to be Russian intelligence, they appear to be cyber false flag operations. I have also noted that Team Snowden actually goes back, and the so-called privacy advocates go back to the CIA and what I believe are the evolved CIA focal point networks within other government agencies, including, in this case, NSA. Spoke about that in For the Record 891 and 895. Suffice it to say that everybody's hero, Edward Snowden, whose escapades led to the, directly, or the opening chapter in the new Cold War. He worked for CIA while infiltrating NSA, stealing of information. Then, along with Jacob Applebaum, who also is financed by CIA and worked with WikiLeaks, travels to China, just as Obama is meeting with President Xi of China. Then, just before Obama meets with Angela Merkel, Glenn Greenwald releases more Snowden information indicating that NSA was spying on Germany or had Germany as its number one foreign target. And then, just before Obama is going to meet with President Putin, Snowden, courtesy of WikiLeaks, goes to Russia. That cancels the summit between Putin and Obama, and the new Cold War is on. We're going to talk about many aspects of that. I believe that the Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden are analogous to the U2 incident blamed on Lee Harvey Oswald, by the way, by some people, that led to the deliberate shootdown, the deliberate sabotaging, I should say, of Francis Gary Powers' U2 spy plane led to the cancellation of a summit meeting between then U.S. President Dwight Eisenhower and then Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev, thereby deep-sixing detente between Russia, between the Soviet Union and the U.S. I think Snowden is in many ways the obverse Oswald. One of the points that I have made, and it will be made at greater length and in more detail in this program, is that one of the things that is so perilous about cyber matters is that a skilled hacker or hackers can very easily mask their activities in such a way as to make the authorship of their hack appear to be someone other than themselves. Hacking, as a matter of course, goes on all the time. Intelligence services hack each other and each other's databases and servers. However, that is done with good operational security or OPSEC in order to maintain secrecy, because the whole idea, as in any other form of espionage, is to operate undercover and to gain information without attracting attention to yourself. If you're working for CIA, FSB, whoever, and you want to infiltrate somebody, you don't walk in with a Delaney tag saying, "Hi, my name is Bill, and I'm working undercover for the CIA," or "Hi, my name is Vladimir, and I'm working undercover for the FSB." That is extravagantly brainless, and that is exactly the sort of extravagant brainlessness we are seeing with the so-called Russian intelligence hacks here. We're going to begin our discussion, and there will be many links in the written description to the show, with something that goes to the core of what I believe to be a cyber false flag operation, and that is that the CIA's own hacking source code is specifically apparently designed to mask authorship and specifically designed to deflect attribution of authorship to Russian, Chinese, Arabic, or Iranian players. From the Heavy.com blog of April 3rd of 2017 by Stephanie Dubey, or D-U-B-E, Dwilson, D-W-I-L-S-O-N. WikiLeaks Vault 7 Part 3 reveals CIA tool might mask hacks as Russian, Chinese, or Arabic. It reads in part. This morning, WikiLeaks released part 3 of its Vault 7 series called Marble. Marble, M-A-R-B-L-E, reveals CIA source code files along with decoy languages that might disguise viruses, trojans, and hacking attacks. These tools could make it more difficult for antivirus companies and forensic investigators to attribute hacks to the CIA. Could this call the source of previous hacks into question? It appears that yes. This might be used to disguise the CIA's own hacks to appear as if they were Russian, Chinese, or from specific other countries. These tools were used in 2016, WikiLeaks alleged. It's not known exactly how this Marble tool was actually used. However, according to WikiLeaks, the tool could make it more difficult for investigators and antivirus companies to attribute viruses and other hacking tools to the CIA. Test examples weren't just in English, but also Russian, Chinese, Korean, Arabic, and Farsi. This might allow a malware creator to not only look like they were speaking in Russian or Chinese rather than in English, but to also look like they tried to hide that they were not speaking English, according to WikiLeaks. This might also hide fake error messages or be used for other purposes. The point being here that this malware code, this hacking code, I should say, was specifically designed to create cyber false flag attribution. That is front and center. there is a very important article from the CBS News website of July 2nd of 2017. This features analysis by Guillaume Poupard. That's G-U-I-L-L-A-U-M-E, the French name for William Poupard, P-O-U-P-A-R-D. He is the chief of the French Cybersecurity Agency, ANSSI, or A-N-S-S-I, an acronym. And he notes the perils with attribution of hacks to a particular author because specifically cyber warfare, cyber attacks are tailor-made for cyber false flag attribution. And this absolutely should be borne in mind, in particular in light of the design of the CIA Marble source code. Again, from CBS News of June 2nd of 2017, French security chief warns of risk for, quote, permanent war, unquote, in cyberspace. Cyberspace faces an approaching risk of, quote, permanent war, unquote, between states and criminal or extremist organizations because of increasingly destructive hacking attacks, the head of the French government's cybersecurity agency warned Thursday. In a wide-ranging interview in his office with the AP, the Associated Press, Guillaume Poupard lamented a lack of commonly agreed rules to govern cyberspace and said, quote, "We must work collectively, not just with two or three Western countries, but on a global scale," unquote. Quoting, "With what we see today, attacks that are criminal from states, often for espionage or fraud, but also more and more for sabotage or destruction, we are getting closer clearly to a state of war. A state of war that could be more complicated probably than those we have known up until now," he said. His comments echo testimony from the head of the U.S. National Security Agency, Admiral Michael Rogers, to the Senate Armed Services Committee on May 9th. Rogers spoke of, quote, "cyber effects," unquote, being used by states, quote, "to maintain the initiative just short of war," unquote, and said, quote, "cyber war," unquote, "is not some future concept or cinematic spectacle. It is real and it is here to stay," unquote. Poupard said, quote, "The most nightmare scenario, the point of view that Rogers expressed and which I share," unquote, "would be a, quote, sort of permanent war between states and other organizations, which can be criminal and terrorist organizations, where everyone will attack each other without really knowing who did what, in fact. A sort of generalized chaos that could affect all of cyberspace." Poupard is Director General of the Government Cyber Defense Agency, known in France by its acronym ANSSI, A-N-S-S-I. Its agents were immediately called to deal with the aftermath of a hack and massive document leak that hit the election campaign of President Emmanuel Macron just 2 days before his May 7th victory. Macron's political movement said the unidentified hackers accessed staffers' personal and professional emails and leaked campaign finance material and contracts, as well as fake decoy documents online. Contrary to Rogers, who said the U.S. warned France of, quote, "Russian activity," unquote, before Macron's win, Poupard did not point the finger at Russia. He told the AP that ANSSI's investigation found no trace behind the Macron hack of the notorious hacking group APT-28, identified by the U.S. government as a Russian intelligence outfit and blamed for hacks of the U.S. election campaign, anti-doping agencies, and other targets. The group also is known by other names, including Fancy Bear, unquote. Poupard described the Macron campaign hack as, quote, "not very technological," unquote, and said, the attack was so generic and simple that it could have been practically anyone, unquote. Without ruling out the possibility that a state might have been involved, he said that the attack's simplicity, quote, means that we can imagine that it was a person who did this alone. They could be in any country, unquote. Again, quoting, it really could be anyone. It could even be an isolated individual, he said, skipping down. To say Macron leaks was APT 28, I'm absolutely incapable today of doing that, he said. I have absolutely no element to say whether it is true or false, unquote. And skipping down again. Poupart said Rogers' comments left him perplexed and that the French had long been on alert about potential threats to their presidential election. Why did Admiral Rogers say that like that at that time? It really surprised me. It really surprised my European allies, and to be totally frank, when I spoke to my NSA counterparts and asked why he did say that, they didn't really know how to reply either, he said. Perhaps he went further than what he really wanted to say, unquote. And skipping down, this again goes to the incredible risk of cyber warfare, particularly with the clown A blank blank S blank 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 that we are being told was Russian intelligence. I mean, it's really bad stuff. Pointing fingers at suspected authors is fraught with risk because sophisticated hackers can mask their activities with false trails, he said. We suffered attacks that were attributed to China that we think came from China. Among them, some did come from China. China is big. I don't know if it was the state criminals, he said. What I am certain of is that among these attacks, some strangely resembled Chinese attacks, but in fact did not come from China, unquote. If you start to accuse one country when in fact it was another country, we will get international chaos, he said. We'll get what we all fear, which is to say a sort of permanent conflict where everyone is attacking everyone else. Unquote. And again, bearing in mind the design of the CIA hacking source code, specifically designed to give cyber false flag attribution to Russia, China, or whoever, this weighs very large indeed. Also, bear in mind that everybody's hero, Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, was CIA when he infiltrated NSA, and then along with the CIA-financed Jacob Applebaum of WikiLeaks, traveled to Hong Kong just as Obama was meeting with Xi, and then ultimately his trip to Moscow, courtesy of WikiLeaks, just as Obama was going to meet with Putin, was the beginning, led to the cancellation of the summit and the beginning of the new Cold War.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
More about Guillaume Poupart and the alleged Russian hacking of Macron's campaign. Note that APT 28 and APT 29 aren't even determined to be separate hacking entities, and it is not at all clear that it was Russia. That once malware has been used in an attack, it is available on the internet, and the heavy-handed, evidently false flag cyber characteristics of this I have talked about in past programs. We'll come back to that. From the AP, and this AP interview referenced in that CBS News article I just read, from June 1st of 2017, from the Associated Press website, French cybersecurity leader, no trace of Russian hacking group in Emmanuel Macron campaign leaks. The head of the French government's cybersecurity agency, which investigated leaks from President Emmanuel Macron's election campaign, says they found no trace of a notorious Russian hacking group behind the attack. In an interview in his office Thursday with the Associated Press, Guillaume Poupart said the Macron campaign hack, quote, was so generic and simple that it could have been practically anyone, unquote. He said they found no trace that the Russian hacking group known as APT, it should be the alleged Russian hacking group known as APT-28, blamed for other attacks, including on the U.S. presidential campaign, was responsible. Poupart is Director General of the Government Cyber Defense Agency, known in France by its acronym ANSSI. Its experts were immediately dispatched when documents stolen from the Macron campaign leaked online on May 5th in the closing hours of the presidential race. Poupart says the attack's simplicity, quote, means that we can imagine that it was a person who did this alone. They could be in any country. Recently, Vladimir Putin gave an interview in which he said that any hacks into the U.S. election could have been done by a private Russian hacker, which is certainly true. Again, hacking, and take this from someone that is and for decades has been based in the Silicon Valley. Hacking is legion, and hacking goes on all the time. There are private players who hack all over the damn place, and organizations, governmental and private slash criminal, that hack. When someone is hacking to gain intelligence, they mask authorship. The same is true when they are trying to hack in order to gain information from which they can make money. They don't advertise who they are because obviously that can get you arrested. Ultimately, we have not seen a great deal of cyber terrorism. I am afraid that we are going to. But hacking goes on all the time. As I've spoken about in past broadcasts, to attribute these clumsy, quote, hacks, unquote, many of which may not have been hacks at all, to Russia is a joke. And they give every indication, and we will come back to this, of being false flag operations. The following is from the New York Times of June 1st of 2017. This is by Andrew Higgins, who is one of the more propagandistically inclined, shall we say, of the New York Times journalists. Of the New York Times, although still the best U.S. daily paper, that could, I guess, be seen as an example of damning with faint praise. The New York Times is the CIA's number one propaganda asset, as discussed in, among other articles, a very famous 1977 Rolling Stone article by Carl Bernstein, the famed Watergate journalist. This is a New York Times story, June 1st of 2017, by Andrew Higgins. Maybe private Russian hackers meddled in election, Putin says. And this is spun as indicating that Putin is trying to cover Russian intelligence tracks. But what has had very little discussion is what Putin actually said and what is at the end of the article, skipping down. And this is Andrew Higgins and the New York Times propagandizing here in the first sentence. An expert at muddying the waters and creating confusion, Mr. Putin advanced a number of alternative theories that could help Moscow address any firm evidence that might emerge as a trail leading to Russia. Stating that modern technology can easily be manipulated to create a false trail, he said, quote, I can't imagine that someone is doing this purposefully, building a chain of attacks so that the territory of the Russian Federation appears to be the source of that attack, he added. Modern technologies allow to do that kind of thing. It's rather easy to do. Mr. Putin appeared to be repeating an argument he first made earlier in the week in an interview with the French newspaper Le Figaro. Quote, I think that he was totally right when he said that it could have been someone sitting on their bed or somebody intentionally inserted a flash drive with the name of a Russian national or something like that, Mr. Putin told the French newspaper, referring to Mr. Trump. Anything is possible in this virtual world. Russia never engages in activities of this kind, and we do not need it. It makes no sense for us to do such things. What for? And next, we're going to review an article that we went into briefly at the end of a recent program. This is from the Ars Technica blog of May 8th of 2017. It's by Sean Gallagher. Evidence suggests Russia behind hack of French president-elect. In fact, it doesn't at all. And this really exemplifies not only what Guillaume Poupard was talking about, but when I talk about this as a very clumsy false flag operation, sort of like the painting of Oswald Red, this talks about it. And again, skipping and talking about the hacking of Macron's campaign, which again, the NSA and our media are saying this was Russia, and the evidence points elsewhere. Talking about the files, skipping down. The files were initially distributed via links posted on 4chan and then by WikiLeaks, had forensic metadata suggesting that Russians were behind the breach and that a Russian government contract employee may have falsified some of the dumped documents, in addition to the fact that there was Cyrillic metadata, which, again, no Russian intelligence operative is going to do. Listen to the following. And note that WikiLeaks attributes this to Russia. As we've noted in the past, WikiLeaks is not a progressive organization at all, but a fascist network, and deeply involved in the beginning of the new Cold War. And note that the WikiLeaks person in charge of its Russian operations is a fascist named Joran Jermos, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, unquote. I've been talking about the fascist nature of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. They emerged during a campaign as the more or less official, semi-official, online dirty tricks element of the Trump campaign. More about that later. But note the following. Even WikiLeaks, which initially publicized the breach and defended its integrity on the organization's Twitter account, has since acknowledged that some of the metadata pointed directly to a Russian company with ties to the government. And then it says, Macron leaks, quoting WikiLeaks, hashtag Macron leaks, name of employee for Russian government security contractor Evrika appears 9 times in metadata for, and then the name of the leak archive, and this from WikiLeaks of May 6th. Now, note the following, note what this is. Evrika, or Eureka, Z-A-O, is a large information technology company in St. Petersburg that does some work for the Russian government, and the group includes the Federal Security Service of the Russian Federation, or FSB, among its acknowledged customers, as noted in this job listing. The company is a systems integrator, and it builds its own computer equipment and provides, quote, integrated information security systems, unquote. The metadata in some Microsoft Office files shows the last person to have edited the files to be Roska Georgi Petrovich, a current or former Evrika ZAO employee. According to a Trend micro report on April 25th, the Macron campaign was targeted by the Pawn Storm threat group, also known as Fancy Bear or APT-28. And skipping down, the metadata attached to the upload of the Macron files also includes some identifying data with an email address for the person uploading the content to archive.org. Skipping down, the email address of the uploader, frankmacher1@gmx.de, is registered with a German free webmail provider used previously in the 2016 Palm Storm APT-28 phishing attacks against the Christian Democratic Union, German Chancellor Angela Merkel's political party. This is, as if I had not seen this, I don't really think I would have believed that anybody with half a brain would have taken this at face value. No intelligence services, cyber agents are going to do this. They're going to use Cyrillic metadata. They're going to use the name of the organization that was involved, the name of the individual. This is absolutely ludicrous. And given the high stakes of the operation involved, this ultimately could lead to a Third World War. I suspect we're going to see the U.S. and perhaps other players try to hack or successfully hack the Russian 2018 election. This is ridiculous. It is so stupid, I don't think I would have believed it if somebody had told me this. The notion that a state intelligence agency, cyber operatives, would leave not only metadata with from the Cyrillic alphabet or in the Cyrillic alphabet, but would leave the name of the organization and the last person to edit the files in the goddamn metadata. That is stupid, beyond stupid, beyond stupid again. And the contention that this is Russia, well, ultimately this could result in a Third World War and the end of the goddamn world. I hope that the propagandists and just the outright shills and morons who are echoing this, well, they obviously don't, they have the spiritual evolution of a pimento olive, because the karma behind something like this is very heavy indeed. As we looked at in, for the record, 959 briefly, the fake documents that emerged out of the Macron hack, again, supposedly done by Russian intelligence, you know, leaving Cyrillic metadata, the name of the organization, the name of the individual that did it in the metadata, just absolutely ludicrous. Turns out that the altering of the documents not only appears to have come from what I call the underground Reich or the American alt-right, but specifically a brilliant Nazi hacker named Andrew Arenheimer, A-U-R-E-N-H-E-I-M-E-R, a.k.a. Weave. He is the site architect for the Daily Stormer, arguably the most important Nazi slash alt-right website. Also an honored guest at Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras' party celebrating their receipt of the Polk Award. Andrew Arenheimer not only appears to have been behind the altering of the doctoring of the fake documents, but he is residing in Ukraine at the moment. From the Wall Street Journal, we touched on this briefly at the end of, for the record, 959. The Wall Street Journal of May 16th of 2017 by David Gautier-Vialars, G-A-U-T-H-I-E-R hyphen V-I-L-L-A-R-S, U.S. hacker linked to fake Macron documents, says cybersecurity firm. Skipping down. Shortly after an anonymous user of the 4chan.org discussion forum posted fake documents purporting to show Mr. Macron had set up an undisclosed shell company in the Caribbean, the user directed people to visit NouveauMartyr.com for updates on the French election. That website, according to research by web security provider VirtualRoad.org, is registered by Weevlos, W-E-E-V-L-O-S, unquote, a known online alias of Andrew Arenheimer, an American hacker who gained notoriety 3 years ago when a U.S. appeals court vacated his conviction for computer fraud. The site also hosted by a server in Latvia. The site is also hosted by a server in Latvia. Note that, Latvia, one of the Baltic states, and one of the most virulent advocates of the new Cold War. Beginning again, the site is hosted by a server in Latvia that hosts the Bailey Stormer, a neo-Nazi news site that identifies its administrator as Weave, unquote, another online alias of Mr. Auernheimer, virtualroad.org says. We, quote, we strongly believe that the fake offshore documents were created by someone with control of the Bailey Stormer server, said Tord Lundstrom, L-U-N-D-S-T-R-O-N, a computer forensics investigator at virtualroad.org. Skipping down. Intelligence and cybersecurity investigators examining the flurry of social media activity leading up to the hack followed a trail of computer code they say leads back to the American far right. Skipping down again. When asked if he, well, this is Andrew Angham, contacted by email over the weekend the publisher of the Daily Stormer, Andrew Angham, A-N-G-L-I-N, said he and Mr. Auernheimer had used their news site to write about the fake documents because, quote, we follow 4chan closely and have a more modern editorial process than most sites, unquote. When asked if he or Mr. Auernheimer were behind the fake documents, Mr. Englund stopped replying, skipping down. Asked if Mr. Auernheimer resided in Ukraine, as a January post on a personal blog indicates, his lawyer said, I think this is about right, unquote, skipping down again. The phony documents intended to smear Mr. Macron were posted to 4chan.org twice by an anonymous user. And again, note the apparent residence of Andrew Auernheimer in Ukraine. C-14 or Combat 14, the paramilitary wing of the neo-OUNB Svoboda organization, one of the OUNB knockoffs that is part of the Ukrainian government and national security establishment. Combat 14 is named for the 14 words minted by David Lane, a member of the Nazi terror group The Order, that was guided by the Turner Diaries, and that in turn was offered by William Luther Pierce of the National Alliance, one of the neo-Nazi organizations that was represented pro bono by Glenn Greenwald before his career as a, quote, journalist, unquote. Greenwald spent years running interference for Nazi killers and the leaderless resistance strategy, including the National Alliance. I talked about that in, among other shows, For the Record 888. So the presence of Mr. Auernheimer at Greenwald's and Poitras' party, it might normally be dismissed as, you know, some sort of unfortunate oversight. However, very unfortunately, it is business as usual, and sadly, for citizen Greenwald.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Now, we are going to come back to a subject that we spoke about in For the Record 917. Not only WikiLeaks as the more or less semi-official online Dirty Tricks component of the Trump campaign, but WikiLeaks as a far right-wing slash fascist propaganda organization. Now, we also are going to talk about the murder of Seth Rich. He was a Democratic National Committee staffer who was murdered in what appears to have been a botched robbery. This was spun by WikiLeaks as, you know, Hillary Clinton murdered Seth Rich because he was the source of the DNC hacks, blah, 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 blah. And yet another of the hacker players, part of the Julian Assange, Edward Snowden, Glenn Greenwald, Melia, a guy named Kim Schmidt, a.k.a. Kim.com, has once again emerged in the Seth Rich murder conspiracy propaganda theory. Now, once again, as we discussed in For the Record 812, which is linked in the written description for the Record 960 when it is released, Kim Schmidt, once again, a.k.a. Kim.com, as he calls himself, Kim Schmidt, a German national, appears to be linked to Underground Reich and very possibly German intel. From the synoptic description of For the Record 812 about Kim Schmidt, a.k.a. Kim.com, a colleague of Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden, Julian Assange, and Glenn Greenwald, Kim Schmidt, a.k.a. Kim.com, espouses the same libertarian free market ideology underlying the corporatism of Benito Mussolini. With an extensive criminal record in Germany and elsewhere, Der Dot Commandant, as I call him, has eluded serious punishment for his offenses, including executing the largest insider trading scheme in German history. Again, the suspiciously light criminal sentences that were laid on him suggests very strongly that he may have been working on behalf of powerful interests, very possibly Underground Reich / BND. Continuing. Embraced by the file-sharing community and elements of the so-called progressive political sector, .com actually allied himself with John Banks, B-A-N-K-S, and his far-right ACT party in New Zealand. Schmidt's / .com's embrace of the so-called progressive sector came later and is viewed as having damaged left-leaning New Zealand political parties at the polls. Kim.com is enamored of Nazi memorabilia and owns a rare author-autographed copy of Mein Kampf. And once again, Kim.com is in the news, and once again, he is helping to feed information to Fox News and others about the Seth Rich, quote, murder conspiracy, unquote. We're going to go into that at some length here. This is from Vox News of May 24th, 2017, by Jeff Guo, or Guo, G-U-O. The bonkers Seth Rich conspiracy theory explained, and about the murder of Seth Rich, a Democratic National Committee staffer, who was shot to death in Washington, D.C., skipping down. As the police have repeatedly stated, there is no evidence that Rich's death was anything other than the consequences of a botched robbery. But some people, especially on the right, believe Rich was murdered by the Clintons for knowing too much about something. The most recent theories claim that Rich, not the Russians, was responsible for leaking the emails published in WikiLeaks that revealed Democratic Party leaders had talked disparagingly about Bernie Sanders. This, by the way, was part of the destabilization of the Democratic Party. Reminded me very much of the way Eugene McCarthy's campaign helped to destabilize the Democrats in 1968. Eugene McCarthy, the, quote, peace candidate, unquote, in 68, was CIA and was financed by Stuart Mott, who at the same time as he was financing, quote, peace candidate, unquote, Eugene McCarthy from the CIA, was also financing the production of Mitchell Rebell's silenced Mach-10 and Mach-11 machine pistols. Eugene McCarthy, by the way, endorsed Ronald Reagan for president in 1980, just what one would expect from a peace advocate, no? Continuing. Thanks to an erroneous Fox News story last week, that's redundant. Thanks to an erroneous Fox News story last week, which was finally retracted on Tuesday, Rich recently became the focus of an intense media blitz from conservative outlets, many of which were eager for something to talk about besides the scandal swirling around Donald Trump. Fox News' Sean Hannity was one of the most enthusiastic rumor mongers, devoting segments on three separate occasions last week to Rich. Even after Fox News retracted its story, Hannity promised he would continue to investigate. "I retracted nothing," he said defiantly on his radio show Tuesday. Rich's family has been begging right-wing news outlets to stop spreading unfounded rumors about him, but by now, the situation seems to have gotten out of control. In death, Rich has become a martyr to the right, buoyed by a host of characters, each with their own ulterior motives. There is WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who wants to downplay the alleged connections between WikiLeaks and the Russians. There are Clinton haters who want to spread the idea that the Clintons are murderers. There are the Trump supporters who want to minimize the idea that Russian hackers helped deliver the election to their candidate. And there are the talking heads on Fox News who needed something other than negative Trump stories to move, to make conversation about. We might not know who killed Seth Rich, but we do know who turned his legacy into a textbook study of where fake news comes from, how it spreads, and the victims it creates. Seth Rich worked in Democratic politics for most of his career. He grew up and went to college in Omaha, Nebraska, where as a student he volunteered on two Democratic Senate campaigns. After graduating, he moved to Washington, D.C. for a job at Greenberg Quinlan Rosner, a progressive opinion research and consulting firm. He was later hired by the Democratic National Committee after he worked on a project to help people find where to vote. On Sunday, July 10th of 2016, Rich was shot to death about a block from where he lived in the Bloomingdale neighborhood of Washington, D.C. Gunshot detection microphones placed the time of his shooting at around 4:20 a.m. Rich had last been seen around 1:30 a.m. leaving Lou's City Bar in Columbia Heights, about a 40-minute walk from where he lived. It is unclear what happened during those three intervening hours. The Washington Post reported that, according to his parents, cell phone records showed that Rich called his girlfriend at 2:05 a.m. and talked to her for more than 2 hours. He hung up just minutes before he was shot. The police found Rich on the sidewalk with multiple gunshot wounds, at least two in the back. He still had his watch, his cell phone, and his wallet. There were signs of a struggle, bruises on his hands, knees, and face, and a torn wristwatch strap. According to the police report, he was still, quote, conscious and breathing, unquote. Family members say they were told that Rich was very talkative, unquote, though it is not publicly known if he was able to describe his assailant or assailants. Rich died a few hours later in the hospital. The police suspected Rich had been the victim of an attempted robbery. Bloomingdale is a gentrifying part of Washington, D.C. that still suffers from violent crime. In 2016, there were 24 reported robberies with a gun that occurred within a quarter mile of the street corner where Rich was shot. Bear in mind, this was at 4:20 in the morning. Almost immediately after news of Rich's death, conspiracy theories began circulating on social media. A few factors helped make Rich a target of speculation. And they talk about a number of different factors, skipping down. It's unclear this, again, this is in the description for the record 960. It's unclear whether any of these, it's unclear what any of these facts have to do with the Clintons, but somehow the Reddit user concluded, quote, "Given his position and timing in politics, I believe Seth Rich was murdered by corrupt politicians for knowing too much information on election fraud," unquote. That tracks right back into the Trump propaganda about the election. Continuing. Others on Twitter and a trolling website 4chan also speculated that Rich might have crossed the Clintons in some way. Rich's death seemed to fit in with the Clinton body count theory, which dates to the 1990s, and claims that the Clintons are so vindictive that they hire hitmen to murder people they don't like. People who believe the Clintons are murderers often point to Deputy White House Counsel Vince Foster, who suffered from clinical depression and died of a gunshot wound to the mouth in 1993. Several investigations all ruled Foster's death a suicide, but some conservatives insisted that there must have been foul play. They claimed that Foster, who was looking into the Clintons' taxes, may have uncovered evidence of corruption in connection to the Whitewater controversy, a guilt by association scandal involving friends of the Clintons. By the way, James Comey was an investigator on the Senate Whitewater Committee. Do not lose sight of that. Continuing, the Clinton body count theory has endured over the years simply because people don't live forever. Anytime someone dies who was connected to the Clintons, and since Bill Clinton was the president of the U.S., literally thousands of people who were in his orbit, this theory is dredged up again and again by the tinfoil hat crowd, and then it slowly fades. And then, as noted here, enter Julian Assange. Skipping down. On Dutch television in August of 2016, Julian Assange hinted that Rich, not Russia, may have been the source for the WikiLeaks emails. Whistleblowers go to significant efforts to get us material and often very significant risks, he said. As a 27-year-old works for the DNC, was shot in the back, murdered just a few weeks ago for unknown reasons as he was walking down the street in Washington. Was he one of your sources then? The anchor asked. We don't comment on who our sources are, Assange replied. Then why make the suggestion about a young guy being shot in the streets of Washington, the anchor replied. Pressed repeatedly for clarification, Assange concluded that, quote, others had suggested that. We're investigating to understand what happened in that situation with Seth Rich. I think it's a concerning situation. There's not a conclusion yet. As part of its, quote, investigation, unquote, WikiLeaks offered a $20,000 prize in August for information about Rich's murder. Parenthetically, before I continue, bear in mind that Roger Stone, the veteran GOP dirty tricks operative closely identified with the alt-right, was talking during a campaign of being in direct touch through an intermediary with Julian Assange. Continuing. This is the point where Seth Rich became a prop in the game of international espionage. Trump supporters and the alt-right amplified the theory that Rich was some kind of Democratic whistleblower or leaker, even though the facts didn't really fit this pattern. He didn't have access to the DNC emails, and he had never shown any prowess at hacking, and being a data analyst involves a very different set of skills. Besides, the DNC wasn't the only organization that was hacked. Clinton campaign chair John Podesta's personal emails, for instance, were stolen separately, as were the emails at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. The same month, Trump advisor Roger Stone claimed without evidence that Rich was murdered, quote, on his way to meet with the FBI, at that point headed by James Comey, who was on the Senate Whitewater Committee, to discuss election fraud, and election fraud being a major theme of the Trump propaganda, theme of the Trump campaign. And then, lo and behold, as the story unfolds, skipping down, on Fox News' Sunday morning talk show, Newt Gingrich reported his belief that Rich, not Russia, was responsible for the DNC hack. It turns out it wasn't the Russians, he said. It was this young guy who I suspect was disgusted by the corruption of the Democratic National Committee. On Monday, Assange issued a cryptic tweet using the hashtag Seth Rich, which fanned the flames even further. WikiLeaks has never disclosed a source. Sources sometimes talk to other parties, but identities never emerge from WikiLeaks hashtag Seth Rich. And now, enter Kim Schmitz, a.k.a. Kim.com, probably working for Underground Right, probably maybe BND. Certainly Underground Right, this the fellow who's a collector of Nazi memorabilia and has an autographed copy of Mein Kampf. And on Tuesday, New Zealand file-sharing entrepreneur Kim.com, who was wanted by the U.S. government for copyright infringement and racketeering, claimed that Rich had personally contacted him in 2014 and that the two had talked about, quote, a number of topics, including corruption and the influence of corporate money in politics, unquote. I know that Seth Rich was involved in the DNC leak, .com wrote in a statement. There's more in the written description for the program.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
There's also an article in the program that in the description, that I'm not going to have time to go into, from the Gizmodo blog of May 20th of 2017 by Matt Novak. Kim.com says FBI file about Seth Rich is fake, but he won't delete it from Twitter. This is about a file that he tweeted out, Kim.com, that is, the owner of the author-autographed copy of Mein Kampf. But he says that he won't delete it because he knows that Seth Rich was, in fact, the source for the information about the Clinton campaign. Now, note that Andrew Auernheimer is currently resident, apparently, in Ukraine. There are many, many evidentiary tributaries going back to Ukraine and other elements of what, in For the Record 943, I call the Galen Gang. And note that the shadow brokers, by the way, as discussed in the McClatchy D.C., once again, one of the, quote, Russian hackers, unquote, from the McClatchy D.C., April 10th, 2017, by Tim Johnson. Mysterious group posts alleged NSA, more alleged NSA hacking tools, Russia link suspected. Skipping down, here's your Russia link. In its statement, shadow brokers said the latest leak following 1 8 months ago is our form of protest, unquote, to goad President Donald Trump into staying loyal to his followers and promoting anti-globalism. The screed included profanity, white supremacist commentary, and a password to the cache of the tools. Doesn't sound like Russia to me at all, but, quote, alt-right, unquote. And note the following, again, talking about the high-profile hacks, the allegation or the attribution of this to Russia comes primarily from CrowdStrike. And about that, from The Nation magazine of January 3rd of 2017, an article by James Carden, C-A-R-D-E-N, is Skepticism Treason About CrowdStrike. Dmitry Alperovich is also a senior. He is the co-founder and the cybersecurity chief of CrowdStrike. Dmitry Alperovich is also a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. The connection between CrowdStrike co-founder and chief technology officer Dmitry Alperovich and the Atlantic Council has gone largely unremarked upon, but is relevant given that the Atlantic Council, which is funded in part by the U.S. State Department, NATO, the governments of Latvia, where the Daily Stormer is hosted, and Lithuania, the Ukrainian World Congress, and the Ukrainian oligarch Viktor Pinchuk, has been among the loudest voices calling for a new Cold War with Russia. As I pointed out in the pages of The Nation, in November, the Atlantic Council has spent the past several years producing some of the most virulent specimens of the new Cold War propaganda. And elements of the OUNB milieu have also been goading the Democrats in the direction of attempting to salvage their loss in the election by Mark Ains from Alternet.org of December 7th of 2016. The anonymous blacklist quoted by the Washington Post has apparent ties to Ukrainian fascism and CIA spying. One of the key media sources who blamed the DNC hacks on Russia, ramping up fears of crypto-Putinist infiltration, is a Ukrainian-American lobbyist working for the DNC. She is Alexandra Chalupa, described as the head of the Democratic National Committee's opposition research on Russia and on Trump, and founder and president of the Ukrainian lobby group U.S. United with Ukraine Coalition, which lobbied hard to pass a 2014 bill increasing loans and military aid to Ukraine. In one leaked DNC email earlier this year, Chalupa boasts to DNC Communications Director Louis Miranda that she brought Michael Isikoff to a U.S. government-sponsored Washington event featuring 68 Ukrainian journalists, where Chalupa was invited, quote, to speak specifically about Paul Manafort, unquote. In turn, Isikoff named her as the key inside source, quote, proving, unquote, that the Russians were behind the hacks and that Trump's campaign was under the spell of Kremlin spies and sorcerers. This concludes For the Record program number 960, update on the high-profile hacks being recorded on June 8th of 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.